Oscar. Stats Adam.
Live from the K-Word Studios here at Washington University in St. Louis. Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad. Brad Lewis is away this week again. Let's win a game.
Hi, Dr. Jeff here.
What's up, Milo?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Join the Facebook page, Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad.
It's Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad, with Brad and Stats Adam.
Good afternoon, everyone. Coming to you live from the Palatial K-Word Studios here at Washington University in St. Louis. My name is Bradley Basker, your co-host of Bedtime Sports with Brad and Stats Adam. Alongside my esteemed co-host, Stats Adam, coming back to you for another edition of Bedtime Sports. Friday afternoon, looking back on the week that was, previewing the weekend that's coming up. You are listening to KWUR Clayton 90.3 FM. You can follow us on Twitter at Stats Adam and at Bradley Basker. And you can join the Facebook page, Bedtime Sports, where we archive, I should say Stats Archives, because Stats does all the dirty work. He goes in, he uploads it, and you can listen to the show as many times as you want at no charge at all to you. So, Stats, welcome back for another week. We got a lot to talk about. It's a big week in sports. We obviously have the Olympics and the Michael Sam story.
The Olympics?
Those are going on? Yeah, yep. But first, I know you want to talk about NBA All-Star Weekend, so kick it off, and what comes to mind first?
Well, it's Friday, so we have the Rising Stars Challenge. It's Friday, we have the Celebrity All-Star Game, and then we have Saturday, NBA, the weekend is the highest point of the weekend, because they can have the highest highs or the lowest lows with the slam dunk contest as well as the other events. And then you have Sunday with the All-Star game. We did just have James Harden get announced, who's going to be starting instead of Kobe, who we knew was not going to play. Just a lot of great stuff for this weekend. I would love to go each event by event, because there's so much you can talk about with each one. Starting off with the Celebrity game, which it's Bill Simmons and Jalen Rose coaching. It's Michael B. Jordan playing in the game. We have quite a few other celebrities, Kevin Hart in there. I don't think Michael Rapaport this year, but I just always enjoy the Celebrity game, just because, from year to year, you'll either have a Terrell Owens sighting or he'll go off, or you'll have Justin Bieber show off one year. It's just a fun thing every year. Now you have Mike and Mike doing it this year. You have Chris and Ledlow, who's doing the inside stuff with Grant Hill. And then a lot of WNBA players sneaking in there. And Stan Verrett, on the SportsCenter anchor, yep. He's playing. It's just really funny. They actually had a full, it was like 10 minutes or so, podcast on Grantland where Bill Simmons and Jalen Rose revealed their teams. And for some reason, Bill Simmons is coaching the West and Jalen the East. But I don't know if you had anything that you like about the Celebrity All-Star game.
I won't be watching. I'll probably check out the highlights. I just enjoy seeing who plays as opposed to watching the game itself, because it's pretty low grade basketball.
Yes.
But
yes.
I'm glad to know that there are people out there like you that take value in these types of exhibitions.
Well, Bruce Bowen's going to be doing something fun, right? He's going to have to slip his foot underneath some player and injure Mike Greenberg maybe for the rest of the year. It's going to happen, something like that. We're going to see some crazy stuff. I don't know, that's what I always see.
If it gives us something to some fodder for next week's show to talk about some controversy that comes out of, the Celebrity basketball game, then it's good for business. Otherwise, I'm not totally keyed into the game tonight. But
I got you.
I understand the intrigue behind the game. So, you got the sophomore rookie challenge. It's no longer called that because I think it's not just sort of a fantasy draft type of situation.
What you want for the NBA All-Star game is going on with the Rising Stars Challenge. Grant Hill and Chris Webber drafting the teams. As far as our little home bias, we have Kelly Olynyk and Jared Sullinger both being on the Chris Webber team. And I don't know. It's always fun just because these guys, you know, as opposed to the celebrity game, it is an exhibition, but they give you this tremendous amount of talent with no defense. So it's like a preview of the All-Star game, but usually somebody hits seven threes and that's the MVP.
Yeah.
No, I do enjoy this game. I'm probably not going to be able to watch that one either, but I think it's cool to see the young talent. And you know what I always find more intriguing is when you have a first and second year player that's really an all-star. Like, they have no real business being in that game because they're actually all-stars. So you obviously have Damian Lillard,
Davis.
Anthony Davis. You know, I think that those might be the only two. But you have players like Bradley Beal. You know, those kind of guys that are fun to watch are really on the cusp of being all-stars, but you get to see them in their own spotlight in the rookie-sophomore game that's no longer called that. I'm happy to see Sullinger and Olynyk getting some representation. Sullinger's really starting to get a lot of recognition around the league.
Eastern Conference Player of the Week?
Yep. I think he had, what was it, like 20 and 16 for that? Or something
career high 31 against Sacramento. He matched DeMarcus Cousins in their victory over the Kings. And then Olynyk has his first two double-doubles of his NBA career in his last two games. He's been fantastic. He's the second-best offensive rebounder on the Celtics this season. And I actually wrote an article today just about all the amazing things he's done. He still has not matched his minute total from last year at Gonzaga. So really, we'll see about the rookie wall with Olynyk, but these two guys will be fun to watch. And Jared Sullinger actually called it. He wants Kelly Olynyk to be the MVP of the Rising Stars Challenge.
That would be some good publicity for the Celtics, absolutely. Maybe up his trade value. I just get the feeling that they like Olynyk around the team and that he's part of their long-term plan.
I think I'd agree with you there. It seems like he's on the fringe. It's like one of those things where he had the ankle injury that sidelined him for five games each in November and December. And since then, he's really just grown back up again because he had to start earlier in the year, six of the first 14 games with the Celtics. He had to start. And now he's finding more of his rhythm. It seems like he's going to be able to play 30 minutes here and there, 25. He does still average more than six fouls per 36 minutes.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's awful.
I've never heard of anything like that in my life.
He has more fouls combined. I'm sorry, he has more fouls this year than he does combined in his final two playing seasons at Gonzaga.
Wow.
So,
that is unbelievable.
When the Celtics don't have a big man to help him out, it ends up being one of those situations. It'll be interesting going forward.
He can't rely on his ability to jump high, you know, to get up. So he's got to resort to some hacking and try to get away with it. When you're a rookie, you don't get those calls. You're not going to get the benefit of the doubt. Whereas when you're a star at Gonzaga, you're not going to get those calls. You're also playing against a lot of white centers in, I think it's the WCC conference, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
West Coast Conference. Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, that game, it should be a lot of fun to see those, you know, rising stars, and especially those guys at the top of their game, Lillard, Davis, Beal, those guys, they're right on the cusp, like I said, of being really elite top 15, top 20 kind of guys in this league.
And when you look at the rosters, it's going to be a pretty fun game. It's actually interesting. The only sophomores on Team Weber are Anthony Davis and Jared Sullinger. The rest are rookies, which is kind of an interesting dynamic, kind of bring you back to those old days when it was a rookie, you know, a rookie sophomore challenge. You know, as far as the rosters go, is there a team that you prefer? Is there somebody that you like? I'm going to list off the rosters here. Actually, we have Lillard, Beal, Drummond, Barnes, Terrence Jones, the Greek Freak. I'm having trouble saying his name still. I'm still on his
Adetokounmpo.
Adetokounmpo.
Something like that.
I feel like you did it very well. It's tough. And then Jonas Valanciunas, who I think Chuck called him Valensauce. Valanciunas.
Tremendous.
It's fantastic. And did you see Vanna Black? I'm sorry, Shaquille O'Neal.
No.
Doing the they called him Vanna Black. So now he's known as the Black Pat Riley. Vanna Black.
Who is?
Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh.
Because he was doing the picking. Basically, when they made the selection, he would bring the card over
tremendous.
To the Rust. It was fantastic. It was just a great scene for them. And, you know, it's an interesting roster. All right, so I'll finish off the Team Hill roster. Waiters and Plumlee, who's replacing Pero Antic.
Oh, I'm just looking at the rosters now.
Yep.
Team Hill, I think, is far and away better.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
I mean, Team Weber has players that I don't even think are that good. Tim Hardaway Jr., Steven Adams. Yeah, I think they could get run out of the gym, to be honest. They got some nice players. Obviously, any player in this game is nice, but top to bottom, Team Hill is pretty solid. Yeah, I like Team Hill in this game.
It would make sense just because of how
just overwhelming. And I was mentioning the sophomore bias there too. It's huge. The only rookie that is on the Team Hill squad is the Greek Freak. It's crazy. I just didn't expect to see something like that when you're supposed to have a fantasy draft, and it ends up coming out that pretty much the rosters are almost exactly the same as if you wouldn't have one. So it's just pretty funny. And I was just looking up the fouls per minute, basically, as far as a win it goes this season. I'm pretty sure it's the best in the league, or it's up among the best in the league. Obviously, when you average more than six per
and best being an oxymoron in this case.
Yes.
So
it's among the best. It's fantastic.
All right, Seth. Let's keep moving.
Yes.
Let's talk about start with the skills challenge on Saturday night. Give me your winner and why.
All right. Well, first of all, the skills challenge for some reason decides to stay with the guards. I still want it to change to the big men. The starters have been talking about it recently. Just why not just make it fun and have Anthony Davis and then a bunch of just disgusting old guys do it? I don't know. I just feel like why not just have the 7-footers try this? It'd be so much fun to watch.
It actually could be. Imagine Greg Oden.
Yes.
Looping in and out of those like cones or whatever, pulling up from three. It would be kind of funny, but I think when it comes to All-Star Weekend, with any of these sports, it's about a showcase of the best talent. And that's what I want to see. I want to see the best players doing things that we on the couch can't do, and doing it at a high level. So, it's like saying, would you want to see, a soft-hitting second baseman filled home run derby?
I think we've seen that once or twice.
We had that Brett Boone when he got the zero that one time. But I'm just saying, that's not... There's some comedy, but at a certain point, I want a high level of performance. I want to be intrigued by the immense skill that a player has, and I think the skills challenge puts that on when you have guards. Now, I wouldn't mind seeing LeBron or Durant, someone like that, who's got a full array of skills, but I think the speed comes from those point guards.
No, it makes sense. It does.
So do you have a favorite?
That's a tough one. I would lean towards, just because of his length, as far as the East goes, because it's going to end up being one East versus one West, I'm pretty sure, at the end. I'm going to go with, and then this is another, by the way, Trey Burke is in both the Rising Stars and this. You have Antetokounmpo, who's in both the Rising Stars and this. Lillard, both competitions, as well as every competition for Lillard. And he's setting a record doing that. That's why I'm mocking off Lillard. I'm not sure he'll be able to do it, because he's going to be doing so many competitions. That's why I knock off Antetokounmpo and I knock off Burke as well. I think, and Michael Carter Williams also in both competitions. So I'm going to bring it down to everybody who isn't. I guess I'd go with Reggie Jackson then, with the Thunder. A little BC product action here, and I kind of like him just because he just has that explosiveness that I don't know if I'd see that from many of the other guys, especially because they will be coming off the back-to-back, the quote-unquote back-to-back.
Interesting. No, he's totally come onto the scene. He's an outstanding player. I watched a lot of that OKC game last night against the Lakers, and he's really been that number two. Him and Ibaka have kind of split that Russell Westbrook production.
Definitely.
Reggie Jackson's really stepped up in a similar way that Eric Maynard did a couple years ago, when I think maybe Westbrook got hurt that year too, and Maynard stepped in and was just a tremendous backup point guard. But I like Goran Dragic in this. I think he's one of the more underrated players in the entire league. You could make the case he was a snub for the All-Star team this year. The fact that the Suns are in the playoff picture, he's probably the best player on that team, been playing out of his mind. And I think that kind of revenge factor, that chip on the shoulder, might help him get it done on Saturday night. And he is just so shifty. He's got that jumper. I like Goran Dragic to pull it out.
It's amazing what he's done this season. You're absolutely right, especially without his running mate in Phoenix. I'm not I can't even think of the name right now. It's just Eric Bledsoe.
Oh, Bledsoe, who's
since
been
Bledsoe's
out.
Been out for so long, just being able to fill in for him, and they've actually stayed in the race. It's amazing, and Hornacek has just done a fantastic job in Phoenix.
All right, so we're gonna talk about the 3-point shooting contest in a second, but first let's get to our second PSA. First PSA.
Instead of ordering in. For free ideas on how to save, go to feedthepig.org.
All right, yeah, I think I got ahead of myself. It seems like the show is just flown by. That I was like, it's
last week was what flown
45.
By.
Yeah, wow. Anyway, so 3-point shooting competition, the odds-on favorite's got to be Steph Curry, just because of how ridiculous he is from anywhere on the court. But you know what? This isn't a 30-foot 3-point shooting competition or coming off a screen. This is a catch-and-shoot, effectively. You're grabbing it. You're shooting 25 shots. Who you got?
All right, so Kyrie Irving is looking to defend his title. He really wants to be in, you know, like the Larry Birds who won, or I think Larry Bird was the only one who won 3 in a row, and he's trying to do that. He really wants to put together a string of winning these. You also have Flavio, Beal, and Johnson representing the East. Bellinelli, who is arguably one of the best shooters in the league coming out of the Western Conference for the Spurs. You mentioned Curry, Lillard, and Kevin Love. All right, Kevin Love's either going to put up a huge dud or he's going to be in the finals. I feel like it's going to be one or the other. Or he's going to hurt his hand and he's going to miss the rest of the season.
Yep.
Either one of those.
That would be so Minnesota if that happened.
Oh, absolutely. And just if David Kahn was in the building, maybe that would be perfect just to complete the cycle.
Yep.
And I'm surprised Rubio was not in the skills challenge, correct?
He can't score.
The shot would just give him an extra minute.
He's also a horrible finisher at the hoop. I know it's an uncontested layup. I wouldn't put it past him to miss the layup. He's probably the best. Now that Nash is not Nash anymore, I think he's probably the best pure passer in the game.
You know what's crazy? And this is just out of the blue, and I don't know why Kendall Marshall is doing this, but I saw one pass last night, and I don't know if you remember this specific one, where he just stopped on a dime. It's about, I think, left elbow as he was coming down. He has the back door coming, and he just slides it through two defenders.
And it snapped backwards.
And there was mustard on it. There was weight, so there was. I couldn't believe how much there was on that.
I think are you talking about the one? It like looked like he kind of cut the ball, so that it cut right back into the body. It was
absolutely.
If you're out there, just watch the highlights of the game. I'm sure they'll show it as it might have even been the assist of the night. It was an outstanding play. I was watching with my friend. I paused it, rewinded. I'm like, dude, you have to watch that. Because that's a great backdoor pass if you just kind of bounce it in there. But the way he cut it so that when it hit the ground, it shot backwards into the guy. It's hard to explain over radio, but it was an outstanding, outstanding pass. But anyway, getting back to the skills challenge and Rubio, Rubio not being in it. So,
for the three,
who you got?
For the 3-point?
Oh, 3-pointer,
Yeah. I just don't think Curry wins it just because usually the favorite doesn't win these things.
Yep.
I'm going to go out of the dark horse. It's going to be Aaron Aflalo. Also a snub for the All-Star game. Also a guy who has the chip on the shoulder. And a guy who gets really hot and... my favorite NBA 2K14 or NBA 2K player ever.
Really?
Never miss one.
Why is that?
Never
miss one. He never misses.
Find him basically on the baseline, and I love it. So he's going to make all. And do you know what they have for a wrinkle this year in the 3-point competition? The last rack is all money balls. So the corner, I think he gets them all, or 4 or 5.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it'll be funny to see. Well, not funny, but it'll be intriguing to see if players kind of rush to make sure they get all 5 of those last shots, or do they do it like they would normally do it and make the most of those initial shots. So wait, are the last ball on the other racks money balls, or is it that there are no money balls till the final rack?
I think it's actually they can choose it, and that's why I was thinking in my head it would be the last rack. But now that I'm thinking about it, you might not want to use it as your last rack.
I don't think so either.
When do you get hot? That's the question. When do you know that you want to do it? Do you want to do the first 5, or do you want to do like the best shot is the corner?
The upside to saving it till the end is you could have a horrible. Yeah. You can be like, damn, I'm missing everything right now. You get to the last rack, you're like, you know what, I can salvage this. I could be okay. It's an interesting scenario, but I just think you might be rushing to get to that point, and you don't actually shoot like you normally would.
Yeah,
I like Beal. From what I've been reading, his shot is when he actually shoots the basketball, it kind of comes from the hip area and goes up.
Interesting.
So he has the most natural motion to grab the ball off the rack and go into the shot. So I like Bradley Beal. He's also a stud shooter. I mean, any of these guys here could win. You know, any game a horse, but I like the fact that his form replicates the kind of form you need for this type of contest.
So I mentioned, I think Love has the chance of going crazy numbers. It could be 5, it could be 25. Who would you pick as your guy who finishes last? He gets the worst score out of any of these guys. It's possible.
Oh.
I just can't see Bellinelli doing it. I'm trying to think of names
I think
Joe Johnson. Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, in the same way that Goran Dragic and maybe Aaron Aflalo, have that chip on their shoulder. We don't think that they're very happy about not getting in for the actual All-Star game. I think Joe Johnson getting in, he's just due for a total letdown complete. I think he might suck in the All-Star game. He's going to suck in this contest. I think he has the biggest chance of just wetting the bed.
He's the perfect participant for that.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm seeing, you know, love can be either way. It feels like Joe Johnson might just be one way.
Yep.
And doesn't even show up. That would be hilarious.
I wouldn't put it past him.
I love it.
All right. So that gets us to the slam dunk competition.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we discussed this last week, but we said it's a pretty decent lineup of names. There's you don't have Jeremy Tyler or Jeremy Evans and some of those no names that they've had in the last few years. You got a decent crop of players. It's now in teams of three?
Correct, West and East.
So who do you like? Who do you like in terms of a team, in terms of a player?
All right, so overall, as far as teams go, I have to go with the East. You have the star power with George. It's kind of like last year where George has done in the past, but he's never been like a star like this. Lillard is the upcoming star that's coming out of the West. But Terrence Ross has that high flyer motion. He's the defending champion. And John Wall just has a nice little star power that goes with him, and he has that little guy feel.
Yep.
So for some reason, I don't think of Lillard as small as Wall. Wall kind of just doesn't have that frame, and he just seems to be like a little tinier, and he has that little extra Nate Robinson feel. Like if he can get up, he can give you that extra flair. Macklemore just doesn't have the star power that goes with him. When you're voting, that's when it comes down to I'm seeing that an East player will win. But the voting will be for one player from the fans, and the team's victory will come from the voters as far as the in-house ones. I'm pretty sure the legends and stuff like that. So the dunker of the night, I think I'd have to go with George because that's a popularity contest. Even though I don't even know if he's going to do the best dunk, I think the best dunks will come from guys like Terrence Ross. Even Macklemore would come up with some crazy ones. I think Macklemore was even discussing possibly doing, I think it was the 720 or some crazy thing. I forget exactly what the Macklemore one was. I'm gonna look that up. But I think the contest comes down to a popular contest for the popular dunker. But I think the East wins because they have Ross. And I think George ended up coming up with some nice dunks as well.
Yeah, no, I think you make good points because I think the way Macklemore gets anything, you know, gets to the next round, makes it to, you know, even winning it, is he needs to do something more extreme than anyone else because he doesn't have that name, you know, name brand that all those other players do.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think it could be a boom or bust. He could come up with something that we've never seen before because he's got nothing to lose. He just has to go all out. But at the same time, he could also just be like one of those guys that takes forever to nail the dunk, and it's just like you give him he might perform a 10 out of 10 dunk, but it's taken him 6 tries, so you give him an 8. That type of thing. I could see that happening as well.
Well, keep in mind, this is a situation in which you have the freestyle round to start off, where they're just going to be running in layup lines or dunk lines. So they're going to all have to make at least one within the 1 minute, 1.5 minutes that they have to do. So I feel like he's going to try that. He's going to try the 720. But if he doesn't get it, he's going to have to wait for, well, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe he just waits for the final round because they would all have to face each other in the championship round. Everybody's going to have the same amount of dunks, most likely. So that's going to be interesting. You're absolutely right, because you can't really sway the fans too easily, especially when you have a guy like Paul George, who I think increased his voting as far as the All-Star by the most ever.
Wow.
He was like a fringe.
From year to year, you mean?
He was like a fringe, what do you call it, a fringe role player as far as votes last year, and to basically the second best player in the NBA right now.
It's
unbelievable.
His ascent's been spectacular. And I think it started really in that series against the Heat last year where he took it to the next level. He had that exchange, I don't know if you remember, where he went in beat LeBron, went up for a massive and one dunk, you know, kind of pimped to the crowd. And then LeBron came back at the end of the third quarter and hit a 3-pointer at the buzzer of the third quarter. And they kind of like slap five at half court saying, you know, good job. And I think at that point, that's kind of where he took off and he was like, you know what, I can play with these big boys. And his game has just taken a massive leap this year.
What's interesting is overall, you're absolutely right. It's been amazing. People haven't really been talking about the last month and a half or so. So he averaged 28 points in the two games he played in October. November, he kept it up 23 per game. And this is just straight points per game numbers. I can go into the specifics, but the shooting itself is down to a massive low at 35% from the field this month. That's about seven games for him, about halfway through. It's a problem, though, that he hasn't been shooting as well overall. His true shooting percentage is falling. Basically, if you take November and December, put it together, everything has been falling from that combined November and December to now. Is there a reason for concern, or is this just the doldrums of the NBA, the time where you relax, and this is actually the time where, for some reason, Kevin Durant was able to take over January, LeBron might be taking over February. Does Paul George follow suit in March?
It's hard to say. I'm not overly concerned. I think that the Pacers aren't a team that needs to win with high efficiency scoring. When you let up 90 points a game, you can shoot 35% and still win games. You know, he's going to generate the most, you know, eyes and concern of a defense anytime you go out there. Roy Hibbert and David West are guys that, you know, are complementary scorers to Paul George. So teams are probably doing everything in their power to slow Paul George down. I think he'll get out of it. He's so long. He's such a matchup nightmare because of his length at the three. You can't put a four on him because he's too quick. You can't put a two on him. He's got that length. I just think that it's, like you said, it's the doldrums. It's a rough patch for him in the season where his expectations have just gone up so much.
It makes sense. This is his first season in which he's really being expected to handle the dirty work. It was kind of like the year last year was all gravy. You know, you take a look at what he gave you and you're like, okay, well, I'm happy that he was able to do that. And then he almost was able to show up LeBron and so close. And now most likely they'll have the home court. So honestly, just like the Heat, they can save it till the playoffs if they really want to. It just depends on who can really come out on top, because is it really a third team? And we can talk about this a little bit later. Instead of doing a power ranking, we can actually look at who actually is the third best, fourth best, and fifth best teams in the Eastern Conference. It's actually fun to look at.
No, it's funny. You said that, you know, they probably have the number one seed in the East. And I was thinking that for the whole season, really. I really felt like there was a big disparity in records. You look at the standings. They're only two games up in the loss column on the Heat. Mm-hmm. The Heat are playing great basketball. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't write off the fact that the Heat really want to get home court. I'm not sure they want to go to Indiana for a seven-game series. So I don't think it's cut and dry that Indiana has home court. They're going to have to keep playing ball. I don't know what the Andrew Bynum situation is. I know they have him, and I think they're probably going to slowly work him in to the rotation. I think he can only help them on the court, because if he doesn't, you sit him on the bench and you have Roy Hibbert. It's not like you don't have any replacement for him.
You mean Bynum isn't in the All-Star game?
Yep. So let's finish up our All-Star discussion by talking about the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Any storylines that you have. But first, you're listening to Bedtime Sports with Brad and Stats Adam on KWUR Clayton 90.3 FM. Stats, Sunday night, All-Star game in New Orleans. Chris Paul going back home starting.
Yeah, I like that.
James Harden, like you mentioned earlier in the show, replacing Kobe in the starting lineup. Your thoughts?
You know, I think the main storyline that comes to mind, and this is just because of what Durant did in January, and he's actually led the league. I think I saw this stat. Elias put it out there. He's led the league in points, you know, first and second in points per game by the largest margin in NBA history at one point in the league. I think they said since like 71, 72, maybe just because that's how they were able to measure it, but just such a large margin by how you're doing that. It's giving him that cushion, even though LeBron is making that comeback. Is the storyline pretty much, is LeBron or Durant going to try to steal the show and try to score 40 on each other and make it this type of game in which it's the MVP race again?
I could absolutely see that. I don't remember exactly, but I feel like in recent All-Star games, that's happened, where they've both just tried to go off. LeBron takes these All-Star games very seriously. From a statistical perspective, you look at his numbers in years past, he takes it seriously. You're never gonna judge a player's career on All-Star game performances, but I've heard people bring up the amount of MVPs that Michael Jordan got in All-Star games. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but this LeBron like takes all these small things and realizes that there's gonna be discussions. All means something, even if it's something trivial. LeBron takes it seriously. And I think just Kevin Durant is out for blood this year. He just wants to beat LeBron at everything he can possibly do, and I think the first week out of All-Star weekend, we have a Heat Thunder rematch in OKC. So I'm absolutely pumped for that. I think this is a great precursor for that matchup. I would love to see if they go one, you know, guard each other one on one at the end of a tight game, trade baskets down the stretch. That would be tremendous entertainment for the fans.
I'm sure we'll be talking about that next week because that's huge. That's I didn't even think about that because you don't really have too many games after the break, and I didn't think there was going to be something like this right after they get that extendo break. Well, not for those guys, but extendo break for Celtics and teams that have terrible players. But as far as Michael Jordan, you said three NBA All-Star MVPs, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
You don't really see too many multiple MVP guys who really show up in the All-Star game. But I feel like at that time, the All-Star game has really developed, or actually underdeveloped, I guess. It's kind of fallen down just because we've gone to the situations in which Shaq can dribble underneath his legs all the way up the court, and it's more of an entertaining experience for the fans, and that's really what it is. Are they gonna? They could turn it into Kobe versus. Kobe. Jeez, now that's that must have just been in my head. LeBron versus Durant, and then make it again on Thursday. That'd be really interesting. You just gotta hope for no injuries. You know, I think that's really what it is. And there's always the possibility of those. In a game in which you're playing half-heartedly, but really, who's going to be half-hearted? Who's going to be really stepping it up?
Yeah,
interesting.
I think Chris Paul is. Probably it's hard to see Chris Paul's a dark horse, but I think if he plays any semblance of a decent game, I think he might just get voted MVP because he's, you know, going back home to New Orleans. I think the city meant a lot to him. I think he said he is who he is as a player because of his experience in New Orleans. I like Chris Paul as my non-LeBron and Durant MVP. That's who I got for MVP in this game.
If Melo steals the ball from LeBron about 50 times, then I'm thinking Melo. You know, he can score 100, maybe, if he's out there enough.
You're talking about Melo?
Yeah.
Oh, I can see that.
So there would be...
Melo thrives in non-pressure situations where he can just put up points. That's exactly where Melo does his business.
You have the Olympics where he was great as a nice role player because he had the best players in the world on his team, but that was for something. In this situation, it could just be like, holy cow, I can just do anything I want. I'm guessing he has not won but one before as far as an All-Star Game MVP, just because off the top of my head... Whenever he was in Denver, it just didn't seem like he was able to take on that, you know, that All-Star MVP status. I don't think so. So I'm looking here. I don't think he has any. So I think that'd be fun for a first one there. I'm trying to think of anybody else. If Harden, we haven't really talked that much about Harden this season. He might be the dark horse as well, just because no one really has been even thinking about the Rockets, and they've kind of just snuck in there.
They've had a tremendous season. I think I saw at last check they were 33-17. I don't know if that's changed in the last day or two. I don't believe they played. I think they're 33-17. They're having an outstanding season, and for all the talk about how Dwight Howard is a cancer in the locker room and all that, I mean, you haven't heard anything out of Houston. Wow. It's just been
a chic.
Yeah. Oh, it's exactly. And he's now coming back, and that'll be interesting to see how they move him in the trade with the trade deadline. When is the trade deadline? Is it this Tuesday?
I think they have an extra week after the All-Star break. Okay. Isn't it? That's really interesting because you have so many things going on. I know David Aldridge was on Inside the NBA last night because there are so many things, including the Melo situation. And it is Thursday at 3 p.m. That might actually be next Thursday, 6 days away, February 20th. So before we have that huge Thunder Heat game, will actually have the deadline. It'll be interesting because there's a few fringe teams that like think that they can move forward. You know, you have the Suns, you have the Bobcats, who are teams that can maybe move into the second tier of their respective conferences. But the top teams are so far into the tax, whether they're I guess I can include the Nets in there, but they're, you know, the Heat, the Thunder, it's tough for them to push into another another solid player.
So what I've been reading is that the Thunder actually have a few trade exceptions, and according to Adrian Wojnarowski, which if you're on Twitter and you like basketball, he's probably my number one favorite follow. Definitely. He's like the Adam Schefter of basketball. I also can't spell his name, so just look up Adrian Wojnarowski. Try to spell it with as best as you can, and you'll find something. But anyway,
W-O-J.
He's been saying that OKC is looking for a two-way guard who can score, but also can play defense. Because he initially said they were looking for a shooter, and that, you know, comes to mind like a J.J. Redick. Obviously, he's not going to get traded from the Clippers. But then they said they want a two-way player, but that sounds like Thabo Sefolosha. So maybe they just want some insurance for someone like Thabo Sefolosha. Who knows? I think they're in the market because I don't know if they feel confident enough with the team as constructed offensively.
The Celtics and Thunder have been trade partners. Well, if you include this year with the Ryan Gomes snippet in that Jerry Bayless trade, they've been trade partners three times in this last 6-7 year era. Avery Bradley,
I know you were talking about him not being in. I know there would be a lot of context situations. What I was just thinking, the two-way guard, that's the guy who comes to mind because he's the perfect defensive player for a team like the Thunder because we don't know about the Westbrook situation. I don't even know if I'm relying on Westbrook heading forward. And he can actually move into a position in which now you actually have another guard.
You know who has the OKC has the first round pick.
That would be perfect.
I would do that. The thing is that first round pick is likely to be like number 30. You're not getting much value there. But if you told me you're gonna have three first round picks, the Celtics, the Nets or Hawks one, and OKC's, and I was gonna say potentially Philadelphia's, but they're not making the playoffs this year.
Next year, possibly. Next Maryland, year possibly. And maybe two first rounders in like the top 10, possibly.
Yeah,
it'll be very interesting. All right, do we have to take Kendrick Perkins' contract back? Is that basically what the trade would be? That and the pick. I'm trying to think of what off the trade machine.
How would the money work there?
Like, that's where I was trying to figure out off of like just a quick.
Bradley's not making much, isn't he?
Oh, I forgot because of the trade. Oh wow, I forgot because he has to. You know what it is? I'm so afraid of his re-signing and the contract he's going to get next year. You're right. It's not that much. Holy cow! All right, so then you go for it could. Well, I guess it can't be Tabo because they want him.
Who else can you take? Give me Hashim Thabeet.
Let's do it.
All right, so
let's do it. There you go. We just did it.
We'll probably do a full trade deadline recap next show. It'll be perfect. It'll be the day after. We'll have all the trades lined up to talk about. So, Stats, any last thoughts on the NBA before we get to what up with that?
All right, there you go. There's the trade. Hashim Thabeet and Roberson for Bradley. So we'll have that by also.
And a first round pick?
Oh, sure. Throw the first round pick in there. That's perfect.
Awesome. All right, Stats, let's get to what up with that, and we can change gears and talk about a few other sports. All right, Stats. So probably the biggest storyline of this week has been cover to cover. Anywhere you go, any outlet has been covering this story. Michael Sam, the co-SEC Defensive Player of the Year out of Missouri, linebacker, coming out and saying that he's gay, looking to become the first openly gay NFL player ever. What up with that?
It's really interesting, and something really opened my eyes, because there's been so much analysis, there's been so many things about his father, there's so many things, so many angles. The one angle that I thought was really interesting was Jason Whitlock was on Keith Olbermann's show last night, and he talked about sports actually now having to catch up with society. The 34 states that have not legalized gay marriage yet are almost on their way. There's been legislation in the government that's almost forcing them to do so, and we will maybe see the entire country have it legalized. That might be after, or that might be before Michael Sam plays his first NFL game. The NFL is now playing catch-up. The sports is now playing catch-up as opposed to the Jackie Robinson days in which he was in the forefront of American civil rights. Now you're looking at a monetized business in which the NFL especially, which is the juggernaut of what world sports, basically, with the exception of the Olympics, maybe, it's now taking. And it's going to be somewhat monetized, whether the Jacksonville Jaguars are able to get a guy like this or somebody who needs the money, who can really bring it to their team or bring that, I'm not going to call it a circus, but it's definitely going to be a media circus.
Yep.
It's going to be a money-making venture, but the problem is that it's the catching up money-making venture as opposed to the forefront in which Branch Rickey thought it would be for his team, it would be for the money. It's just interesting that it comes from the opposite end of the direction now.
Yeah, no, you, Seth, that's a very interesting point. And it'll be fascinating to see how the NFL works with this. It'll be a huge indictment on the league if he doesn't get drafted. Oh. After he was given a grade of 3rd to 5th round, co-SEC Defensive Player of the Year, in the best defensive conference in college football, I would have a hard time stomaching that if he just fell off everyone's board entirely.
You got to commend the whole Missouri team for playing with him being you know, keeping it a secret as well for the entire final season. What's the problem with not getting a draft, not being a draft pick, and just being an undrafted signee?
Well, because you're pretty much robbing him of money that he would have otherwise made.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a tough place to be. I can't say, you know, if I'm a GM, I would automatically draft him as a third or fifth round pick, whatever he's worth, because it's a business. You got to take into the external factors that come into this as well. There are only a few teams and a few coaches and a few quarterbacks and locker rooms that can probably deal with this the right way. I think the Patriots could be the one that, I mean, Dante Stallworth came out and said he thinks the Patriots are the only locker room that he's been in that would be able to deal with something like this. But draft day is going to be really, really interesting. And going forward, how players react. I know Terrell Thomas, I think he's a defensive back on the Giants, came out and pretty much said he wouldn't really be accepted in our locker room. It just wouldn't work out. There's definitely a lot more players that feel like that. I mean, you think about the homophobic things that were said to Jonathan Martin by Richie Incognito. Yeah. I mean, that word, the F word, is thrown out all the time. You know, just like the N word is said all about. It's not being discussed enough, as much as people are saying, we can deal with it, we're in a new era, you know, we're very accepting, we'll make it work if he's a good player. Deep down, there's a lot of NFL players that have been brought up in the Deep South, very religious, and they don't believe in gay rights and being gay and gay marriage. And so I'm not someone that can see the future. I don't think it's going to be smooth sailing like some people are saying it should be. I just don't think that's practical in this day and age. 10 years' time, different story. Today, I could see him not getting drafted. That's kind of where I'm at. I could see him not getting drafted. I also heard today, I saw today that Greg Bedard said on WEEI that he thinks there's a very, very small chance the Patriots draft Michael Sam. So I don't know why that he would know that, why that's coming out now. He hasn't even been to the combine, but take that for what it's worth.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. And we have some other college news, this one of a different variety. But as you mentioned, the N-word, we don't really know what was said by the fan to Marcus Smart in an Oklahoma State loss. But he reacted, and Smart pushed the fan and went all Cedric Maxwell, or semi-best Cedric Maxwell on him, and was suspended 3 games. What up with that?
Yeah, two points. One on Marcus Smart. I think it's very self-righteous for someone to come out, like an analyst, and say, you just can't do that. You know, how can you got to be able to control your temper? Anyone that's been on a basketball court that's at the end of a tight game in a hostile environment has thrown their whole body into a game, and they're about to lose, and you go flying into the stands. A foul's just been called on you, and you get called something. Whatever that was, and you don't have that adrenaline pumping in your head, and you don't just impulsively react. If you don't understand that, then you have no business pontificating to others. That being said, when you're an athlete and you're on that stage and you're getting a scholarship, or you're a professional athlete, you're on our test, you're held to a different standard than anywhere else in life. If someone calls you a name on the street, you can shove them. You're not getting, you know, arrested. You know, you can't punch someone out, but you shove someone, that's not grounds for criminal, you know, punishment. In college basketball, you do that, you can put your hands on a fan, you're going to get punished. So I actually think 3 games is a fair suspension, a fair punishment. I think a few more games could have been okay too, maybe till the end of the regular season, which would have been, I think, 7 games. So that's my thought there. On the fan, I honestly have no problem with what he did, unless he said the N-word. But if he called him whatever he wanted to call him, if you pay the price to sit in a seat like that, and you know as an opposing player you're coming into a hostile environment, you can say whatever you want. If you don't touch an opposing player, if you exercise your right to First Amendment rights, I think as a fan you can say whatever the heck you want. That's my opinion.
Whatever the heck you want?
Yeah.
See, that's the dividing line in my opinion. I was listening to David Locker earlier this week, a Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer for the radio voice, and he's fantastic. Great stats guy if anybody wants information as far as advanced basketball stats. But he has very interesting controversial issues, just like Sean Grandy of the Celtics. His devil's advocate idea is, why not have the basketball players show the fan who's boss? Why not be in a situation which you don't... The reason why Marcus Smart is doing that is defending his brethren, because you're not letting fans do that to you. Fans cannot just buy a ticket and be able to say whatever they want. That's the question. I don't know if they should be able to. There must be a line, though. If you mentioned that he would say the N-word, I think, yeah, that's crossing the line. I don't know if... Obviously, you can't touch any players. You shouldn't be able to do that either. You allowed to say whatever you want? I'm not sure. I think that's really the difference. Because, for instance, you know, in 81 when Maxwell... And this has been shown all over the place with the Celtics. And they showed Kelly Olynyk, who was a post-game guest for them. And he was like, whoa, what's going on here? The Celtics came back to win that game as in addition to the Eastern Conference Finals and won the NBA Finals in 81. They were down 3-2 in that game. If Maxwell gets suspended for Game 7, I'm not sure they win. He didn't get anything. That's the times that are different.
Yeah.
But by showing the fan who's boss, quote-unquote, you're kind of keeping the fans in check. So,
But again, it's my feeling is...
Why would the fan be allowed to do
that? You're talking about words. You're talking about words. And, mm-hmm. and you teach your kids at a young age, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me.
Interesting.
You've got to be able to just block things out. And I know it's easier said than done, and that was my first point. It's easier said than done, but that's why you're at the highest level. That's why you're a Division I, lottery-bound basketball player.
Does this affect his draft status?
Oh, absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
I think it only does by a smidge.
You know why I say that? Is because look at the precedent that's been set in the NBA after that, the melee, the palace, malice at the palace. If you do that one time, you could be done for the season. So now you've wasted a year with a lottery pick that you've invested when you could have had someone else at that level.
Here's another David Locke idea. Why are you throwing a beer on Steven Jackson, or was it Ron Artest, who was lying on the... That's not allowed. That is something that you can't do. No fans were... I don't think they were subject to any punishment anything close to what the players were. I think Artest had like 74 games the rest of the season with that. That's asinine. There's no precedent... I understand the fan was, I think, he's not allowed to go any more home games this season for that team. I forget which.
It was a self-imposed.
Self-imposed. Oh,
fan.
See, that's terrible as well. How are you not, the fans should have something that they're responsible for. That's the problem. I think that's where people are not understanding. That's why you can't go to a game and be able to do something like that. I understand just words are okay. But I'm going back to the Malice in the Palace. David Stern took advantage of that and said, my players are never going to do that. Of course, it's great that he did that. But the fans, he never went into that venture. And I think that's interesting about this part, because the fans seem to still be unruly, not as unruly as they used to be, but unruly to a degree. It's not good.
So, and here's my concern with Marcus Smart and the other player that comes to mind. Just if I were to say to you, name a player in the NBA right now that has probably the worst temper. Who would you say?
Cousins.
Exactly. Technical fouls, ejections, flagrants, those types of things. Mm-hmm. If you have a pattern of insubordination and those types of things and you react, teams are going to be able to get under your skin. Players. I mean, the amount of trash talking that happens on a court, it's so easy to get under Marcus Smart's skin. I want someone that's a little bit more mentally tough. And that's why I think he goes maybe from a top five talent, which people were saying going into the season, to I don't know, but I think he drops because of that. I think now we've seen kind of peeled off some of the layers, and now we know a little bit more about him. Let's get to our second PSA before we get to more. What up with that?
If someone you know is thinking of dropping out, talk to them. It could be the one thing that keeps them going. Go to boostup.org to learn more. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
All right, Stats. This was kind of... This kind of took the Michael Sam news and put it to the back burner. Derek Jeter made an announcement this week that he will be retiring after the 2014 season. So he's got this 6 month, really now 7 month, because you can include March, actually maybe make it 8 month. Just Derek Jeter suck fest of just, I'm just like nauseous thinking about how it's going to be. I mean, you thought the Mo Rivera one, that was fine, because I think Mo Rivera is just so universally revered, but Derek Jeter's got more of that Hollywood to him. he's also very well liked. He's got the cachet. He's got the flair. It's just going to be a painful, painful 6 years. What up with that? 6 months.
So the best part about this, of course, not that he did it on Facebook, but that he's going to be in Fenway Park for his final games of his MLB career if they don't make the playoffs, which we'll see.
Is Dr. Jeff going to be in attendance? Does he have tickets?
I don't see why not.
You might even be there.
I don't see why not either.
I heard it's a hotter selling ticket right now than opening day.
That's unbelievable. Do you think it's more than a playoff game? You think it's possible?
In terms of pricing?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, well, I think it might be more than what, like, the cost of a first round playoff game. Yeah.
How perfect was that? I think that's exactly, it's kind of like the Chipper Jones playing in Shea Stadium or naming his kid Shea. It's like all those perfect things that come together. And I think that's really what I really hope, and this is, I'm sure it's pure coincidence, but I'm thinking that part of it was Jeter was like, eh, that'd be fun for my last series, wouldn't it? And that's just so cool. I think just with everything coming together. Do the Red Sox do something like they did with Mariano?
Yeah, okay, I think checking. They do. So you have no problem with it?
I think it's fun. I think he gets to go to every city. They give him a little gift. I love that with Mo.
I think it's such a self-serving thing to do, because if you retire at the end of the year, you know, you get talked about your legacy and anything. Now every city's got to have to put on a celebration for him, a ceremony. I just think it's the word is not narcissistic. It's just, I think it's self-serving. It's I don't know if I want to go as far as to say egotistical, but I don't know. I just think that this was so calculated by him. He wants the attention. He wants to be talked about for the next 8 months.
Isn't he like the guy who is usually the opposite of that? Isn't it like A-Rod, would you expect, would do this? All right, let me change the situation then. If it was David Ortiz who was doing this, what would your opinion be? I'm sure it would be similar, but wouldn't it be fun to see what happens?
I don't think he'd get the same
type of swan
song like Jeter.
I think anybody else would. Is there no Red Sox would then, huh?
The thing is, there's very few players that are just universally respected.
Yeah, that's a good
like
point.
Like Rivera, like Derek Jeter. But I just think coming off the heels of the Rivera
that's
thing,
good point.
To do this again, I just like, oh my God. They start the opening of SportsCenter was getting a couple analysts talking about Derek Jeter's legacy. It's going to be like that from now for the next 8 months. This is a twisted thing to hope. I hope he isn't really on the field much this year.
Ooh, interesting.
That'll make it a lot more acceptable. As if I'm not rooting for him to refract or something. I just want that ankle injury to linger a little bit, have some discomfort, maybe tweak a hammy here and there. That'll make it a little bit easier to swallow. But if he's going out there and hitting walk-off home runs and you just have to hear about it every single night opening SportsCenter, it's going to be excruciating.
Especially with the Yankees looking a lot better now. But here we go. We have a fun Dr. Jeff comment for the show here. And this is kind of very interesting. I didn't even think about this. From Dr. Jeff, I don't think Jeter plays after his last series in the Bronx unless the Yankees are in the fight for a playoff spot, which makes complete sense. That might be his final game. Say he's in a situation like that. You know, they're either clinched or they're completely out of it. Why? I don't think Jeter. The tough thing is, I don't know if Jeter would do that.
Yeah, I don't think so. He's not that type of player.
So it would be very interesting. But that's a really interesting angle, though. I didn't think about that from Dr. Jeff there. But
I think if that was the case, it's actually funny because now that I think about this, it actually could be very comical. What if that was the case? The Yankees had something locked up, didn't need to play that last game. So they let the Red Sox know, and they make the ceremony the second to last game. Jeter sits the last game. So now the second to last game becomes Jeter's last game. And anyone that paid up the wazoo for that final game just got screwed out of a game that could actually be meaningless between the two teams. That would be very funny.
Most likely, and this is just a perfect situation, they play a one-game playoff between the Red Sox and Yankees for the final playoff spot at Fenway or at the Bronx. Actually, I think it would be better for the Bronx with Jeter. And that's what happens. It's the Yankees-Red Sox, 1978, and Jeter plays the Bucky F. Dent card. That would be
that
the
would
perfect
be,
send-off
that
for Jeter into the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Or into
the absolutely. All right, Seth, let's do one more what up with that, and then we'll get to our closing thoughts.
You know, I'm thinking, because we didn't touch NBA that much and then what up with that, you know what? The Pistons fired head coach Maurice Cheeks after 50 games. He's one of the only guys, or one of the many guys who was in his first season, only went through 50 games with the team, and they just said, get out of here. Joe Dumars is now a sitting duck with an expiring contract. They went with Lawyer, the assistant coach. What's up with this Piston situation? What up with that?
Oh, it's such a train wreck. I think Joe Dumars is on the hottest of the hot seats right now. I think they've had three coaches since they won the championship. It just hasn't been good. The Josh Smith signing looks like I think you might have used the word earlier, an albatross. I thought this team was really on the way up.
Yeah.
That front court is as long and as talented as you see in the NBA, but
it's too crowded.
There's just no chemistry, and Drummond doesn't have any offensive game. Monroe and Smith is still shooting threes. I don't know what it is about the team. They seem like they have talent, and I still think they could sneak into an eight. I mean, the eight spot is wide open for anyone to make the playoffs, but I think Joe Dumars is on the way out unless his team makes the playoffs. I'll say that right now. Joe Dumars does not last till next season if they don't make the playoffs.
I think he's gone either way. Because they're not going to win a first-round series, most likely. Nine different coaches since Dumars has become the GM. That was in 2000.
Wow.
My responsibility is to get it right. We can be patient only as long as there is progress. Oh, what? Yeah, sure. Be very interesting to see what the trade deadline, because that's, I think Bill Simmons even mentioned. Oh, well, since Joe Dumars is now just playing for, I don't know, I guess playing Yahtzee there in Detroit.
Yep, exactly.
Why not send some flyers his way? You know, maybe get Graham Monroe or something like that, because that would make it perfect for them. They need to at least get rid of somebody in that front court. It'll be very interesting to see going forward.
I like Josh Smith as a player. I just think he needs a coach to like get in his head and screw his head on straight. So I would be okay with going Rondo, Josh Smith, and then pairing him up with a third star. All right, Stats, we wind down the show. Any final thoughts heading into this weekend that we didn't get to touch on today? Anything that stands out.
So Tanaka had what, $195 million jet for five people in his poodle to do his press conference. He was able to say two sentences in English, and now he's going to be a third starter or a first starter. Earlier this past weekend, Cashman goes, well, you know, I think it was last weekend, he goes, you know, solid, consistent third starter right now. I think that's what Tanaka is. I think that's complete horse bleep, because he goes on this past press conference, he goes, this was a Steinbrenner move. If this was a Steinbrenner move, he's going to be your number one starter within the next 2 years.
Yeah, with that money, absolutely. All right, so you've been listening to Bedtime Sports with Brad and Stats Adam on KWUR Clayton 90.3 FM. Coming to you live every Friday, 2 to 3 Central Time, 1 to 2 on the... 2 to 3 Central Time, 3 to 4 on the East Coast, 1 to 2 Mountain Time.
Yes.
We'll be back next Friday, like we said, recapping the NBA trade deadline. Spring training is really right around the corner. Pitchers and catchers, a lot of them have already started to show up, including some positional players. It's a fun time of year. It's a little bit of the dead zone, but we're going to make it fun, keep it going. And obviously you have the draft combine, the NFL combine coming up. So we have a lot to talk about. We'll be back next week. Have a great weekend. We'll speak to you in a week's time. We'll